Welcome back to the Business Bunker Show here on 100.2 FM in South Kent and East Sussex on Freeview 277 and online at bizradio.co.uk. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the stonkingly gorgeous Jill Serkin.
And a big hello to all our listeners, especially in the lovely high street of Hythe, which I'm a big fan of.
Yeah, you're on a Hythe kick at the moment, aren't you? You
really
visited,
love it.
Didn't you?
Yeah, lovely yeah. little flower shop, a great butcher's. Mm. And
it's a lovely town, Hythe.
You know what my new husband...
Do you know where it's near?
Folkestone?
Port Lim.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Out on a limb.
Yeah, yeah.
My new husband, I didn't tell you, when we went to the butcher's at Hythe... Mm. Sorry, I've got homeopathy under my tongue. about 18, can't talk. I have to fit it all in, you know, because I've got my little bag here. So he bought from the butcher's. We bought these amazing pork chops, I think I told you last Tuesday. Mm. And the butcher actually cut them off the bone while we were there. So amazing. Mm. But my new husband bought Tuesdays when I'm not there. He likes to have pie.
Right.
He has pie Tuesday.
Right. Does he make it himself or what?
No, we bought from the butcher's and he bought a curry pie.
Really?
And and he said, he had it last week, but he's got like another one.
Right.
He said it was absolutely delicious. Really? So it's like a Madras curry.
Right, and a pie.
In a pie.
Like it.
That's a real man thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I like that. Where'd you get that from?
From the butcher's.
Butcher's in Hythe.
Yeah, High Street.
And curry pie, there you go.
It used to be Rooks, and then they went under, I think, or they disappeared. And an independent bought it, and it's thriving.
Yeah.
If only I could say thriving with homeopathy.
Thriving without that under your tongue, yeah. Okay.
You don't realise how important a tongue is for talking. Talking of tongue, I do like tongue from the butchers. That's something you don't see very much anymore, isn't it?
Yeah.
Tongue. Did you ever have tongue? Did your mum ever give it to you in a tin of a sundae?
No.
With a salad?
Ox tongue, no. I was never into that.
I was never into it, but we used to get given it.
No, I used to like hearts and things like that.
Do you remember?
And tripe.
We're so old. Do you remember how a salad was on a sundae?
Oh, yeah. Spam.
Spam.
Yeah.
And it was like... Not chopped up, it was like a lettuce leaf with a tomato.
Yeah, and a spring onion.
Yeah.
And a cucumber and some tin spam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, or sometimes you get ham.
And did you listen to the radio while you were doing that?
Yeah.
The Clitheroe Kid.
Wireless.
Yeah. The Clitheroe Kid. Did you listen to the Clitheroe Kid?
Did you?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And then...
we're old, sorry. And then nobody's got a clue what we're talking about.
The Clitheroe Kid. Yeah. You could probably still find it.
I actually listened to an episode on YouTube the other day, which was really sad. Yeah.
So
yeah.
I've sent you a really good clip of Mark Stein, my friend.
Yeah.
And you haven't watched it.
No, but I listened to the Clitheroe Kid. Yeah. I was in reminiscent mood.
I actually watched a bit of Andy Pandy the other day.
Ah, see.
On YouTube. And honestly, it is so sinister.
Yeah.
Because it's old film as well, isn't it? It's all dark and grimy. Yeah.
Cool. Right. Do you want to read something?
Not really, but I will because I'm going to cough. But I'll have a go. I'll struggle.
No, I'll tell you what. You go and muffle cough and I'll read something.
Oh, okay. I was ready.
There's Westrum Networking is happening. We hope you can join us at the 8th of February. That's tomorrow, manana, at the Westrum Brewery for our first Westrum-focused networking meeting of 2023. Please spread the word and invite any business contacts based in and around the area as a guest. And also the Seven Oaks Chamber have a business booster seminar on February the 9th at 10:30 till 12 at Bat and Ball Station. If you want to find out about either of those events, if you go to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/calendar, you can find out all about them and you can book your ticket.
How good. Mm. There's a Rye... I didn't actually clear my throat, but I'll struggle on. Rye Fund Winners Meet. And there's the latest round of grants, and we love a grant, and this is in the area Grant Mitchell. RYE, if you're an American listening in, it's based in Kent. Whereabouts is it in Kent?
It's not in Kent.
Would you describe it?
It's in East Sussex.
East Sussex.
Yeah.
I always thought it was Kent.
No.
Okay. So, East Sussex, how would you describe that for an American listening in? Southeast coast?
Yeah.
On the coast, almost.
Yeah.
They got fish restaurants.
If I was describing it to an American, I'd go, it's in London, turn right.
Yeah, okay. And everybody called Mr. Smith lives there.
They go, it's only 50 miles from London, so it's a suburb.
Yeah. And do you know Mr. Smith? The latest round of grants made by the Rye Fund, and it was celebrated at the Town Hall last Wednesday. Representatives of award-winning voluntary organisations were welcomed by Charles Bronston. You have to be careful.
No, they won't.
It could be the actor, couldn't it? Hmm. But it's not. Charles Bronston, B-R-O-N-S-D-O-N, chairman of the Rye Fund local panel. As in previous years, the annual sum of £10,000 has been made available from the fund to meet local needs in Rye and the district. The evening provided the opportunity for volunteers working for local charitable enterprises to share their experiences. And the Rye Fund was established in 2008 as an endowment fund at the Sussex Community Foundation, and it's dedicated to the support of the voluntary organisations in Rye and district. To date, it's distributed more than £85,000 to local charities, and donations are important for growing the fund, as indeed are legacies. If you feel able or would like to discuss how to give your support, please contact info@sussexgiving.org.uk and refer to the Rye Fund. So that's info@sussexgiving.org.uk. And Rye is a really, really lovely town.
It's a beautiful town. I was there on Friday having lunch with Chris Pollard.
Were you?
Yeah, at Haydn's. It was very nice too.
What is Haydn's? Is it a restaurant?
Yeah.
What do they serve?
Food.
What did you eat?
Baked potato.
God, it's like getting blood out of a stone.
A baked potato. I just told you, with coronation chicken. Yeah.
That's not very seaside-y. Why did you have fish?
I didn't want fish. I wanted a baked potato with coronation chicken.
Coronation. See, that's like going back to the 70s, isn't it?
Oh, we were doing nostalgia.
Yeah.
Old Chris. Chris is older than me.
Yeah, he's still got snake hips, though, hasn't
he? Yeah, I haven't. That's why I was having a jacket potato.
From the back, Chris could pass for a 27-year-old.
He could.
Yeah,
he's older than me. And I'm nearly 70.
I know. Well, you're not nearly 70, are you? What, are you 65?
Yeah, 68.
Are you 68?
Yeah.
I don't know why I hang out with you.
No, not
you are
I.
Getting
yeah.
old.
Yeah.
You got your bus pass.
I have had a bus pass for ages.
When do you get it?
When? 60? Well, you used to get it when you were 65.
Now you have to work till
now
you're 90.
Now you have to be 93, yeah.
After a major refurbishment, Rye Library is open once again. And what a difference. The library has been transformed. Gone are the old ex-Woolworths windows, replaced with smart new windows. I need new windows. More in keeping with the high street. And as you walk inside, the first thing you notice is how light and welcoming it is, and the new carpet just brings it all together. So the opening times are 10 to 5 on Monday, Tuesday, Thursday and Friday, and on Wednesday, 10 till 1. On Saturday, it opens from 10 and closes at 4, and it's not open on Sundays. I love a library, and Rye Library is probably worth a visit. And of course, you know, as we're all trying to keep warm in winter and we can't have our heating on, maybe the library is a good place to commute.
Yeah, they are. A lot of libraries are open as warm centres as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I never thought we'd see that, a warm centre, but I am seeing a few notices saying warm centre.
Yeah.
But it's a good place to go and do some work. Mm. Have they got coffee and tea there, do you know, and things?
No, I don't think so.
Libraries could do that, couldn't they?
Yeah, I don't know.
You could have a little coffee and tea there as well, and then you would never have to leave.
Yeah, I think that's the problem.
Take your sleeping back.
Yeah, exactly. They don't want you moving in. Hey, listen, I want to talk to our next guest.
Oh, I can't wait, because I've got my phone perched on his insulation.
You're desperate to find out about this, aren't you?
It's fabulous, yeah.
It's an absolute pleasure to welcome onto the show Mr. Gareth Hall. Gareth is from Econ Polyurethanes. Gareth, good afternoon. Welcome to the show.
Hello there. Thank you.
Right, let me try and turn you up a bit. Right, so kick off, as with Matt, Gareth, give us a little bit about Gareth. What's your background? Where are you from?
Well, from Kent anyway. I was born in Kent, lived in Kent all my life. Sort of left school, ended up going into roofing, and then sort of from roofing I progressed into sales, and it's predominantly been sort of construction material sales that I've been involved in ever since, really.
Okay, cool. And you're part of Econ Polyurethanes.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit about the company, and then we're going to. Jules is desperate to ask you about this block of polyurethane here, so we'll unleash her on you in a minute. But tell us a little bit about the background. I believe
I still wish he was a roofer, because I've got a leak coming through. I rang a roofer a week ago, and he said he'd come round the end of the week, and I said it's dripping through. Can you? And he still hasn't come round.
Yeah,
they're so busy.
He's up on the roof with a bucket of water.
Oh.
So we're Econ Polyurethanes. We're a distributor of construction polyurethanes, which is sort of construction chemicals. So we're the sole and exclusive distributor for BASF.
Now, of course, we all remember BASF, because we're old, we all remember BASF as being the people that, that supply cassette tapes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even 8-track tapes. Yeah, yeah. But, of course, they're a massive company that do a lot more than that. They're a chemical company, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. The world's biggest sort of chemical company, do into many different sectors. Mm. This is sort of one of the sectors, and we're the distributor for UK and Ireland.
Right.
We have our head office is in Dublin. And our UK office is here in Ashford.
Do you get to get
In fact, hold on. Their UK office is on the floor below us.
He's come a long way, hasn't he? I would have loved it if he was late, because we could have really ripped him, but he was here before me.
Yeah, he was.
Do you get to go over to Dublin much?
Yeah, we have to go over to Dublin for meetings. And,
it's a lovely place, and it's thriving, isn't it?
Yeah, it's lovely.
Economically, it's thriving.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that, but...
Well, yeah, the old house market has stormed up, hasn't it?
No, it crashed.
Well, it's got very expensive.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I mean. It used to be really quite cheap to buy houses there. And
not anymore.
It's not anymore.
Why do you say it's crashed then?
Well, because it used to be a great place to go and move, because you could buy a cheap house.
Oh, I see.
And they had low-cost corporation tax and all the rest of it. But as they're part of the European Union, they have to conform with everybody else. So they're being bullied into putting up their corporation tax rates. But anyway, enough of that. Let's get back to talking about Econ Polyurethanes, because Jules is desperate. Gareth has bought a block of polyurethane, and Jules has been using it to prop her telephone up, to rest her coffee cup on. She's put the microphone on top of it, but she's desperate to find out what it actually is supposed to be used for.
So it's a spray insulation. So we have sort of many accredited contractors across UK and Ireland. They purchase the chemicals, which is in a raw chemical format from us, and they have reactors and equipment which they then produce the insulation with. So it's got sort of many advantages over your traditional insulation, is it can sort of fill every void, every
nook and cranny.
Yeah, every nook and cranny.
So do you squirt this in a great big thing that you
squirt, big squirter.
Yeah, so they have reactors, they have equipment, specialist equipment that they use to install the product. So it's a combination of the sort of two raw materials forming together. To create and produce the material.
Do you want to feel it, Paul?
No, I have already. So, Gareth, let's deconstruct this. is this primarily used on commercial buildings, domestic buildings, or any?
Any building.
Right,
any
okay.
Any building. There's two different formulations. You have a closed cell, which is what that sample is.
What's it called, a closed?
Closed cell. So the cells of the material are closed.
Yeah.
And then you have an open cell, which is more of a soft and spongy version. Right.
And why would you use what? So one, presumably the soft spongy is a bit more flexible.
Yeah, it's a lot more flexibility to the open cell, and you need more of that to achieve a thermal value. So there's different scenarios where you'd be using one over the other. But our main focus is sort of commercial, industrial, and agricultural.
So agriculture, you go into agricultural buildings?
Yeah.
Well, they're not going to spray cows with it, are they? Yeah,
so like feed stores, crop storage areas, sort of animal housing sheds. There's a insulation sprayed internally onto the side of the shed, and it'll give a small thermal value, but it'll also then eradicate condensation.
Oh, condensation!
yeah, you got her now.
So they don't need a squeegee on their windowsill that they have to use every day.
No, they shouldn't do,
I have told my new husband to stop breathing, but it doesn't help.
Yeah, yeah.
But you must remind me to introduce you. I've got a Dutch colleague who makes great big industrial farm animal buildings.
Okay, yeah.
So I'll put you in contact with him.
Yeah, that'd be good.
He's in Holland, probably. Yeah.
Right, I want to understand this, Gareth. So you've got a building, and you're going to spray it.
Yeah.
And you're spraying it to insulate it.
Yes.
Do you spray inside, outside, or in between?
Or in the ladies' chamber?
Either or. Majority of the time it's internal. You're spraying to the inside, the internal skin of the building. But it can be sprayed externally as well, as long as you can then put a sort of waterproof coating over the top of the
I was going to say, so once you've sprayed it, and let's go with the inside of a building, you've sprayed it and it's an insulation material.
Yeah.
Then can you paint over it, or do you have to put walls up, or how does it work?
Either or. I mean, it's most of the time it's going to be left exposed. You'd then be putting an intermission coating over the top.
Right.
But in more of a sort of new build scenarios, it will be obviously the insulation will go in, and then it's a plasterboard lining will be going over,
okay,
over the top.
Okay.
But sort of the advantage you've got with our type of material over your conventional is airtight.
Right.
Which is a big factor with today with heat escaping.
Right. Now, what you've brought in here as a sample is a huge, it's about a 3-inch by 3-inch block, if I remember rightly.
Yeah.
And it's quite solid. Yeah. I mean, presumably that's not how it goes on. Presumably it's in a thinner sheet than that, or?
Yeah, so it's built up, when the guys are spraying it, it's sprayed in sort of 30, 40 mil passes. So they build it up in layers up to the required thickness.
Right.
So normally there's calculations that have been done to determine the thickness required to achieve a certain U value, which means that you're hitting and complying with regulations.
Right. And by applying this stuff, you're basically insulating a room, a building, keeping the heat in?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's going to keep the heat in, it's going to keep you warm in the winter, and then it's going to keep it cooler in the summer.
Right, okay, so it does both.
Yeah, yep. It's going to help to regulate that temperature.
Okay, cool. Fascinating stuff, and of course it's a solid block you've got there, but it actually comes as a liquid.
Yes. Yeah. So we supply the material to our sort of accredited contractor network. They have it comes in drums, one of each. So you have an isocyanate and a resin or a polyol, and these are mixed at a 1-to-1 ratio through their equipment, which then sprays the product out. So they're basically creating the product.
Right.
At the time, we're supplying the raw materials to them to produce it.
Okay. And is it something that you have to supply as it's used, if you see what I mean? Or can you supply it in bulk and then they use it, and when they've used it up, they order more? Or is it something you have to go, right, I'm going to do a building today, so I need to buy enough to do that building?
Yeah, no, so most of the time they're buying it in volume anyway.
Right.
And it might be 2 sets, 3 sets, 4 sets, for whatever, for every project. And that's delivered to site, and then they're moving on to the next project, and then that more than likely be delivered to site as well.
Right.
But they're big. It's heavy drums.
Right.
It's how the material's delivered to them.
Right, okay. Cool. And presumably your Econ Polyurethanes, your business, is selling to the construction business?
Yeah, our biggest market. It's accredited installers, so everybody's got to be trained and accredited to use the product.
And is it in any way sort of toxic if people are breathing it in? Well, I'm sure it is toxic.
Yeah, you'd have to wear
everything
it.
Everything is toxic.
It's specialist equipment, specialist RPE that they're wearing when they're installing the product. Obviously, there's exclusion zones have to be set up. But once the material's cured, it's perfectly safe.
And how do you cure it?
It cures in just time once it's sprayed, within sort of seconds.
A bit like bacon, then.
It's nothing like bacon.
Yeah, you cure bacon, don't you?
But not in quite the same way.
So when you're doing it internally, would that not sort of ruin I guess they decorate afterwards? So you squeeze it into the nooks and crannies when
it's sprayed. So in a domestic scenario, it'd be sprayed between the rafters. Then it can be, if it's a non-habitable area, it can be left exposed. If it's habitable, it's going to be plasterboarded over. You won't see it. Most of the time, you're not going to see it.
Yeah.
And do you have to be careful of when you're going up in lofts of bats and things?
That would be done on a pre-site survey. So all of that would be accounted for before anybody started installing the product.
Cool. It seems to me that presumably you're selling it to the people that do the actual spraying.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. You know, so a construction company building houses or office blocks or whatever aren't particularly going to buy it. They're going to hire the services of a spraying company.
Yeah.
And you're going to supply them?
Yeah, we supply the material to the contractor, to our accredited contractors, but we'll also deal with specifications. We'll deal with U-value calculations. So we're dealing with the architect at the start of the project, or the engineer.
How much you put in, how much is needed.
So,
for example, if something was on the seafront, like my house, you'd put more in because you've got the big north winds and the moisture.
That can be taken into account a little bit, but it'd be more of you need to hit a certain target U value, and then based off of that. And
what was the U value?
So U-value is, it determines the thickness that's needed.
Of what you're using.
Yeah.
And is that the main determinant of how effective it is how thick you trowel it on, as it were?
Oh, yeah, how thick it's applied.
A bit like a makeup.
How thick it's applied.
How rude.
So it's a combination of factors. So you need to know the whole build-up, sort of from outside to in, and then we can then, based off of that, we can put the calculations together to determine.
Because insulation's a huge thing now, isn't it, with heating bills and all that sort of thing, you know, for offices as well. I'm always amazed when I go past office blocks and all the lights are on at night when they're closed. I find it bizarre. Even my health centre, you go by, lights are on at midnight when there's no one there. But insulation must be now more important than ever, I would think, with heating and with eco and everything.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we're not massively into domestic. The majority of ours is the commercial.
But same for commercial.
Yeah, definitely. There's more and more uses for the product, more and more sort of building types it's being used for, where people are realising the benefits that it can have, so especially the air tightness that our product does give.
So that's your polyurethane insulation. Do you have any other products that you market?
Yeah, so we've got a new product called Firetight, which is a cavity material. So it's an injected cavity system. Which isn't a polyurethane, it's a three-part mineral system. It's been in development for 9 years.
Wow.
And it's slowly now being launched into the UK and Irish markets. It's already started in Europe, but it's limited combustibility. So you've got a fire-rated material that's also breathable and hydrophobic.
What does hydrophobic mean?
So it's going to repel water. It's not going to allow water to pass through. On that, so it's and also it's certified for use in high-rise buildings. So it's
Grenfell has been huge.
Again, it's an insulation material.
Yeah, it's an insulation material on there. So and the fact that it's the A2 fire rating as well it's already starting to take off. There's a lot of projects. It's going to be going into in the next few months.
Right, so Graham, Gareth. Why am I calling Graham? I don't even know anyone called Graham. Where they're taking off the cladding at places like Grenfell and a lot of high-rise flats now, then once they've taken the cladding off, you would go in, would you, with your...
There'd be possibilities there. I mean, it's not going to be like for like on a lot of these buildings. If there is an empty cavity, if there is a void there, then obviously then our material can then be used, which will give the fire rating that it needs, and obviously a significant thermal upgrade to the building as well.
So has there been a big change because of Grenfell? Have you seen a big change?
With regard to fire regulations, there is a...
So they've had to sit up and...
Yeah, there's a lot going on. There's obviously been a lot off the back of it, from it, and, it's definitely... people are more aware of fire and materials and combustibility ratings of materials as well.
Absolutely.
I was thinking about Turkey and Syria and thinking, you know, when I saw the buildings collapsing, I thought, although they probably do get earthquakes, their flats are probably not built for earthquakes. They just went down.
Well, they were built on a fault line, so they should have done.
Yeah. Oh, were they?
Yeah. It's a known earthquake fault line that went. The problem in Turkey and Syria was, as I understand it, I was listening to an earthquake specialist yesterday. He was saying the problem was that there wasn't one earthquake, there were 14.
Still,
one after the other. And
they've still got aftershocks.
There were aftershocks from the first quake as the second quake was hitting, and he said it was one of those perfect storm things that really destroyed everything. But it was actually on a known earthquake fault line. Terrible. Okay. As Jules intimated, though, insulation is a big thing these days, especially, you know, with the cost of energy. The kind of things you're doing, I guess, are going from strength to strength, really.
Yeah, oh, definitely. So there's more of a demand. So the network's busy installing products and... but it's going to continue.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm interested in your journey. So you were a roofer from school.
Not from school. There's sort of a few things after, but sort of once I left school, and then I sort of fell into roofing. Did that for a few years, and then just sort of gradually progressed into sales. It sort of wasn't the plan.
So did you discover insulation when you were roofing? Because presumably, because they've got that sort of fuzzy, wiry felt stuff that they roll out.
Do you
they?
Mean
that,
fiberglass?
That yellow stuff that gets
fiberglass, yeah.
everywhere,
yeah,
doesn't it?
At the time, I didn't really take much notice of it. It was okay. just sort of, you were there, you was doing the job, and you went home and you didn't take much notice of what you've been putting in. So it sort of...
So what was your light bulb moment then to move?
Went to insulation.
You didn't like the fuzzy felt?
No, I've been in insulation a long time now. I mean, I worked for a rigid board manufacturer for a few years, sort of came out of it and was working in merchant sales, selling into builders merchants, and then sort of came back into insulation in 2018. But I can just see there's so much opportunity with the material. There's a lot of, obviously there's a lot of need for it now, and there's just so many different uses for it as well,
of course,
especially the spray versions that we do.
And when you say commercial, it'd also be hotels and hospitals and anything really, any commercial business.
Which the products, many of them have been used on, so there's sort of different case studies showing the different areas and the different applications the products can be used for.
Absolutely. Gareth, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Thank you.
Fascinating stuff, different kind of topic to talk about.
Elasto spray.
I beg your pardon?
Elasto spray. He's got a technical guide. We can read it later on. His Elasto spray.
Is that the flexible stuff?
That's the rigid.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, it's called Elasto spray, but it's this. It was my phone holder.
Right.
And then he's got the fire tight.
Yeah.
And then he's got, what's this? I think this is Elastospray. Oh, no, Elastocoat.
Right.
He's got
well. That's a structural waterproofing material. That's a polyurea. Yeah.
I was thinking that. That's just what I thought that was.
Polyurea.
Polyurea.
Yeah.
Not some form of parrot.
Yeah. And, I used to know a singer called Polystyrene.
You didn't.
Yes, I did.
You made that up.
No, I haven't. Google it. Google Judy Nylon and polystyrene. Go on. I dare you.
Well, I will after the show. But then he's also got open cell spray foam as well. He's got it all going on, I tell you. All these pamphlets.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Cool.
Plus he gets to go to Dublin, which for the crack.
But does he feel the crack when he's there?
Yeah. He can go in the nooks and crannies of all the pubs.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Is that the same as the crack?
I bet he goes into places and says, God, it's a bit drafty in here, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then he gets it out of his briefcase.
Spray some, you reckon?
Yeah. Yeah. A little squirt here, a little squirt there. And then the more Guinness he drinks, the more enthusiastic he gets.
Is that right?
Up in the loft. Down in the cellar.
I'm sure you're right. Gareth, thank you so much for that. My friend, do stay with us for the rest of the show. Do you want to read something or a tweet or something?
Well, yeah, the Twitter's going bananas, but I'll just read out the Evening Standard. So they are supporting the scale-up community, SME Expo it is, building on the success of its launch event, the Evening Standard's SME Expo is on the 25th to the 26th of April of this year, and it's at the Excel in London, which probably has very good insulation, hopefully. Once again, invites its founders, entrepreneurs and business leaders to attend an action-filled two-day programme and exhibition connecting the scale-up community, a vital part of the UK economy. If only the government would stop bashing it, we might get somewhere. And then also Canterbury Christchurch, which is here, the uni, their mediation clinic helps support Kent businesses. So the mediation clinic, which is run by Canterbury Christchurch Uni, has increased its offer to Kent businesses by appointing Jeremy Ferris to its panel of mediators. And Jeremy is an accredited CEDR. That's the Centre for Effective Dispute Resolution. He's a mediator and a partner with Canterbury law firm Furley Page. His appointment takes the number of accredited civil and commercial mediators up to 9, as the clinic expects activity to increase as Kent businesses feel the pinch of the economy. The clinic, which has been operating since 2007, was the first of its kind based in a UK university and provides professional dispute resolution services that cover commercial and workplace disputes.
Cool.
And it was very sad. I went into Paper Chase in Canterbury, which, of course, is... has gone into administration.
To where?
paper chase has gone.
Oh, yeah.
And I went into the Canterbury branch and bought some cards which were being discounted. I bought loads. I was talking to the young lady on the desk and on the, you know, till, and I just said, where are you going to go? And she was very downcast. She said, I don't know. And she said, I said, well, there's, you know, I spouted you. I said, there's, like, I don't know how many million jobs, 6.2 billion. How many jobs are there at the moment, vacancies?
Unfilled vacancies, 1.1 million.
There you are. So I told her that, roughly. And she said, but I don't know. I haven't got any training. So she was very downcast. I said, go and look at hospitality. You could get a job in a hotel. They'd snap you up.
Yeah.
You know.
You get a job in anything at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, she was saying that she wasn't trained for anything except for what she's done in paper chase. She's been there since school.
Yeah.
So it's scary, isn't it, for people? It's change. And
It is scary, especially if you don't know how to get a job. And one of the problems is that so many people don't know how to change jobs. They don't know how to do it. Because you're absolutely right. There's jobs around now. Well, people will train. You don't have to have the full set of skills. They'll train you in their industry.
Yeah. Well, hospitality would snap her up. She was a lovely girl. But the paper chase administration, that's Canterbury, Bluewater, Maidstone, Tunbridge Wells and Sevenoaks. And I was doing some tweets when I was in Canterbury. It was very sad, like the shops that were boarded up, the closing down, people sleeping rough in there. And, you know, and they've disbanded the street market, which is really sad. You know, so the street market is gone, which was, you know, was great. And lots of coffee and tea places, which is great if you're a student. But if you're like me, you go in, you don't particularly just want coffee and tea, because I live there, you know, I live around. I don't go for coffee and tea particularly.
You could get a tattoo.
I could get a tattoo.
They've got lots of tattoo parlours.
Yeah.
You get your nails done and tattoo.
I had my nails done yesterday by
Did
the
you?
Lovely Rebecca Nutt, Serenity Becker,
Did
who
you?
Has a salon in Broadstairs, Whitstable and Faversham. And
did you have a nail done in each one?
Well, I'd bitten this one to the quick. I've been quite stressed, Paul Andrews, with my AstraZeneca problems and the clots. So that was literally bleeding.
Well, there's no need for that, is there? You saw what she did then.
That was literally bleeding. And she's put a little faux nail on. That's a faux nail.
A what?
It's not a faux nail.
Faux nail.
Faux, F-A-U.
Is that like a toenail?
No, I'm speaking French.
Oh, faux.
Faux.
Oh.
False to you.
Right.
So that's false. You'd never know. Because it was so sore. Yeah, and
Blimey.
As I'm going to Dubai, she said, darling, you can't go to Dubai with a bitten nail, can you?
Right.
So it will grow under there, because I won't bite that, because it's not
okay.
real.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, but she's great. And she's taken on another apprentice. So she had one apprentice, the lovely Holly. She's trained her up. She'd done a level two. She's trained her up. She's a fully qualified beautician. And now she's taking on another one.
Absolutely. Yeah. Right, on the Twitter, our friend Matt here, Matt Dorrington _ is his Twitter handle.
Yeah.
He has put his recommendation for an app to track unfollowers and inactive accounts, which is brilliant. Thank you, Matt. If you follow Matt, M-A-T-T, Dorrington, Dorrington, _ is his Twitter handle. You can see the link to that app there. Sarah Marsh Collins is talking about your inability to pronounce Kentish place names.
She's empathising with
you. Yeah, and she says, me too. Rootham Heath, surely that's Rootham. Mepham, surely that's Mio Fam. Only just learned Trosley. Surprised by how many familiar names we have in Devon, including Gillingham, except the Gillingham in Devon is pronounced with a hard G, isn't it? It's Gillingham.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm always, yeah, it is strange when you go somewhere else and you find the same name.
Mm.
But the spelling is odd, isn't it?
I mean, I have to imagine
for someone American coming. They can't even say Leicester, can
yeah,
they?
Yeah, or Slough. Yeah.
Slough. Yeah. Is that Slough?
I mean, Trosley's the worst by a million miles because it's spelt Trotterscliffe.
Yes.
Yeah. And pronounced Trosley. Yes. There is no relationship between the two words whatsoever. But it does make me laugh. Medway Business Grants. Partners for Growth is a Medway Council scheme. It provides grants for small to medium-sized enterprise businesses in Medway that are looking to take their growth to the next stage. The scheme is available to Medway residents who are thinking of setting up a business, looking to further grow their business, looking to make their business more environmentally sustainable. If you want to find out more, you can go to medway.gov.uk/PFG grant. That's medway.gov.uk/PFG grant.
and a shop that's showcasing locally produced food and drink at Bluewater has closed its doors. You're giving me sad emails to read out today. I don't want to hear about this.
Well, the trouble is, everything's sad at the moment, isn't it? Our wonderful government have contrived to destroy just about everything.
I kind of wonder, can't we just get rid of them? The Produced in Kent Trade Organisation had... they're friends of ours, aren't they, the Produced in Kent?
Yeah, yeah.
So they'd opened the store in October 2021 as a temporary pop-up shop for 6 months. It proved a hit and ended up extending its stay for a further 9 months. That's a pregnancy, isn't it, really?
Mm-hmm.
During the 2022 Christmas period, the shop, which stocks local producers, of which I've partaken all of these, Kent Crisps, Maidstone Distillery and Fudge Kitchen, they saw a rise in sales of 46% when compared to the same period in 2021. It estimates it served more than 40,000 customers during this spell. So they've closed its doors, and I'm very, very sorry to hear about that. I don't go to Bluewater much, but that's a shame, because I can see what they were trying to do, bring local to a big shopping mall.
Yeah. Tracy Ferguson has been on talking about Gareth there and what he was saying. She said, what another interesting Business Bunker conversation. In my old Victorian house, just like yours, Jules, something like this product, the polyurethane, would be perfect. It's so blooming cold in winter. It's a shame products like this aren't used for all new builds to help support future cost of living green agenda. Very true.
Yep.
Very true.
Yep, she's right there. Volunteers are busy preparing for what's set to be one of Kent's biggest charity shops. The new and huge 2,000 square foot store at the Park Farm Retail Park in Folkestone will also be the county's first Salvation Army donation centre. The charity has already started accepting contributions, with the team being blown away by the response from the public. Now a team of 15 volunteers. You're crackling over there. What are you doing? Opening cans of Pepsi.
I'm opening my can of Pepsi.
Honestly.
Coke.
Is it Pepsi Light?
No, it's Diet Coke.
Yeah, you see, I prefer Pepsi if I'm having anything, but I like the full sugar version if I'm having anything. Mm-hmm. I don't have it much, but I don't like the aspartame.
Do you know what the difference between...
I don't like the aftertaste.
Do you know what the difference between the Diet Coke and Coke Zero is?
No, I've always wondered.
None whatsoever. They're exactly the same product. The Diet Coke is aimed at women, and Coke Zero is aimed at men.
Really? How interesting.
But the product in the bottle is exactly the same.
I would always have Pepsi, but that is really interesting at the marketing. So a woman would go for the Diet
Coke, and a bloke's go for Coke Zero. Yeah,
much more butch.
Yeah.
Anyway, so back to this charity shop. So now that my partner in crime has stopped rattling his Coke, now a team of 15 volunteers are working hard to get the shop ready, and it's going to open on Thursday, February the 19th. Folkestone is another place I like. I watch Folkestone with bated breath, and I really do think the area's up and coming.
Mm-hmm.
Latest government scheme for SMEs. What have they got planned, Paul Andrews?
Go on.
They've got a recovery scheme. So they bash you all down, and then they give you a recovery scheme.
Yeah, yeah.
Will it work?
Dig a hole, fill it in, call it productivity.
It's the latest government-backed finance initiative, replacing CBILS, S-C-B-I-L-S.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Bounce Back Scheme, helping SMEs to navigate today's challenging economy. So phase two of the recovery scheme, the RLS, sets out to provide businesses with easier access to finance without the need to offer your principal private residence as security.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say about that, Paul Andrews?
Yeah, yeah, it's another government scheme. It's another one of the millions of government schemes to loan you money and then get it back.
What I like about this press release is that it ran out of ink as it goes on.
Sorry. Yeah, 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 yeah. The boring bit. Yeah, yeah.
But you'll find all details, as always, on kentbusinessradio.co.uk.
Yeah. I have read this out before, but I want to read it out again. It's, hello, my name is Rebecca, and I'm a second-year paramedic student at Bournemouth University. I've been fascinated by paramedicine for as long as I can remember, and I'm passionate about making a difference to those in need. I've been faced with a fantastic opportunity with a company called Work the World that provides international healthcare internships. This is to go to Ghana in Africa for a three-week-long international placement. During this, I will be working in a low-resource hospital in the emergency department. I will be faced with a whole range of different patients, which will broaden my knowledge both clinically and culturally. I aim to raise £2,500 to fund the trip and the medical insurance that I'll need. To raise this, I will be completing different fundraising events throughout the year. My main fundraising event will be walking 20 miles along the coast. I will be completing this with my mum. I want to go to a developing country to learn how to provide medical treatment in a low-resource environment. It will help me in my future career to think more outside the box when faced with difficult situations. It will also allow me to understand different cultures and beliefs. The trip will push me out of my comfort zone and will allow me to become a better paramedic in the future. If you'd like to help Rebecca, she has a GoFundMe, and it's gofundme.com/paramedic placement to Ghana. Do please give her a couple of pounds to help her raise the money to do that.
It's interesting because my new husband, who works, as you know, in Africa and developing emerging markets, was commenting when I was telling him about Rebecca, and he was saying, well, we've got all the Ghanaian doctors here, you know, in our A&E. Because
do you know we pay the Ghanaian government for every one we take?
Do we? Indeed.
We pay £2,500 for every Ghanaian nurse we steal.
Because I was talking, when I was last at A&E in Ashford, I was talking to a lady from, where was she from? Eritrea. I believe.
Eritrea.
A doctor from Eritrea, and they were nearly all foreign, and I don't think we cope without them. Mm-hmm. But we pay how much?
£2,500 for every nurse we steal from Ghana.
And what I also know is that when the Nigerian doctors come over, if they work over here and then they go back to their country, they get paid very, very well for some reason. I guess because they've got the experience that had here. Mm-hmm. So it's very good for them to come over and work. Mm-hmm. Third Thursday, we have a networking in Tunbridge Wells, the very posh Tunbridge Wells, and it's to be held at the Finance Hub on February the 16th. And it's limited space, so please book early, they say, and places are free to chamber members, and guests can join the meeting for £15. It's sevenoakschamber.com event, February, Tunbridge. I was going to ask Gareth, actually. There are quite a few construction exhibitions, because we have the Construction Expo, don't we?
The Construction South East Expo, yeah.
And you mentioned one when we were chatting as well.
Yeah, I think it was last week at the Kent event. It was the Build It Live there. I mean, so we didn't exhibit this time, but we do exhibit a few. So it's there's quite a few now, so you have to sort of make sure you try and pick the right one.
Yeah, sure.
So I think the last ones we done was UK Construction Week, so it's sort of more of a national one as opposed to regional. But they're definitely worth doing.
Yeah. So when you do that sort of thing, do you go with a team or just you? Or
yeah, no, there's normally a few of us there.
And you've got the stand with all the flags and all the stand and little pens you give out. And
yeah, got the freebies, and then you've got your videos and that playing, so people are aware of what your products are and what they do. Your samples and that there. They're good. Good interaction.
Mm. Mm. Make sure... This gives me collywobbles, this.
Oh, dear.
Make sure your profits stay yours. Presented by Kent Police Fraud Intelligence Team. Every business is open to fraud in the digital age, don't I know? Join Stephen Kelly from Kent Police to learn what steps to take to protect your business. This is taking place this Thursday, the 9th of February, and it's a free seminar, and it's happening at the Business Terrace, which is in King Street, Maidstone. If you want to find out more or book your place on it, kentbusinessradio.co.uk/calendar.
I haven't got anything else to read.
Have you read them all?
Yeah. I'm very diligent. I don't.
You're very who?
I'm diligent.
Are you?
Yeah.
I thought you were Jules.
Yeah. I'm diligent today.
Are you? Oh, I've got loads left to read.
Go on. You do it so sweetly.
The Folkestone Hythe District Council have introduced a green business grant. It's there to help smaller businesses become more energy efficient. Grants of up to £10,000 may be available to your business, and in some exceptional circumstances, up to £25,000. The scheme will run until the 31st of March. To find out more and to apply, if you go to folkestone.works/green business grant scheme. That's folkestone.works/green business grant scheme. She packed up work now.
Yeah, I'm just reading my Twitter now.
You've had enough now.
I was actually thinking about asking Matt for another tip, because his tip was so good. I'm very excited. I mean, when I get home tonight, glass of wine, sit there, go on that app, Matt.
She's going to go and unfollow everyone.
Yeah, I'm going to be very grateful to you for that, because it's frustrating. You know, it's silly, isn't it, if you've got a follower that hasn't tweeted for, you know, 10 years or something, then you're just...
It's an interesting thing on Twitter. I've seen it a couple of times in the last few weeks as well. A lot of people don't always read the basic Twitter framework. Yeah, and a load of people started moaning at Elon Musk that they were unable to follow any more people. And when you look, they've all hit the 5,000 limit. Mm. Initially, when you join Twitter, there's a 5,000 follower limit, and there's an algorithm that balances who you follow versus how many people follow you back.
Yeah.
What happens is people hit the they follow 5,000 people, but they've only got 1,000 people following back, so you can't follow any more.
Yeah, which makes sense.
But when you look, they've just followed loads of people that haven't bothered to follow them back, and you think, if you unfollowed them, you could start following people that would follow you back.
Yeah. It's quite interesting sometimes when you unfollow people and they then immediately follow you.
Yeah.
I've noticed that. But there are, like, Jeremy Vine blocked me. He used to follow me. And then I just raised a few points about what he was saying, and he just immediately blocked me, which means he just doesn't want to hear any other side. And
yeah, I
block rude people, people that are just abusive. I block them, or I mute them. Muting is quite a nice way of doing it.
Well, I'd rather just block.
Yeah.
If you don't want to see them,
I'm
a strong believer in if you don't want to see somebody's content, unfollow them.
Yeah. Or if they're being rude, I think.
Absolutely.
Abusive and rude.
Yeah, if they're being abusive or directionally rude, definitely unfollow. I mean, I'm always up for a good conversation on Twitter or a good discussion. And if it's healthy, even if you disagree, I'll keep following the person.
Do you know what's happening with me? I'm finding it difficult just recently. I don't know why. I'm not seeing mentions. So, you know, where I'm in a conversation, I just find that people are talking to me still, but I haven't seen it. It hasn't come up.
Yeah.
What's that about? That seems new.
Yeah.
I'm missing a lot of mentions.
I think until they've got to the bottom of how all of this has been working over the last few years, it's going to be a bit of a mess.
Well, because, they got rid of loads of people, didn't they?
Yeah, well, no, but Musk has been, he's been perfectly honest about this, just saying that the code's a mess and they're trying to sort it out. But while they're trying to do that, you know, you're going to get funny results.
Effectively, you save Twitter, because Twitter's just going to go bust. They're spending far too much money. Twitter Blue has completely turned that around.
Yeah,
it's given them an income. He's turned it around. Yeah, he had to get rid of quite a lot of people, but as he put it in some of his documents, it was dead wood. There was just people scratching other people's back, and that's what they were doing. He cut it down to the core people, cleaning up the code. There's been so many improvements already.
I agree.
I'll tell you, one of the things I've started to do now with some of my own tweets is delete some of my own tweets. And the reason for that is you can get into a string of tweets in a debate with someone, and then a week later someone will pick up a tweet that's halfway through the thread and give you jip over it. And you go, but you haven't read the rest of the thread. Yeah. And
they go, so you delete one of your original tweets.
Sorry?
You delete one of your...
Yeah, so I got so fed up with that I just go, and after a couple of weeks, I just go and delete all my threads.
But you can mute yourself out of a conversation, and you can leave a conversation, which is really useful.
You can leave a conversation, but that's only just been put back in. It was taken out.
Yeah. I like that, because sometimes it just gets too much.
Yeah, well, because people tag you.
Yeah.
You do it to me all the time. You tag me in a tweet, and then 4 days later, and there's 200 people all having a go about something. I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah. I just go, leave conversation.
Yeah. It's good. It's a great tool, that. Leave conversation.
And it stops you tagging in. No, the thing that annoys me is, you have a debate with someone or an argument or whatever you're doing, and then you've put like 20 tweets, and then they'll pick up the 21st and they'll go, you're wrong. And you go, you haven't read the rest of the tweets, yeah? And then they'll start an argument about it, and it just drives me nuts. There's like some guy today trying to argue with me about Ofcom. Yeah, he hasn't got a clue. He doesn't know what it is. He could barely spell it.
Apparently, Wayne Cunnington said there's a piece on Mark Stein in The Guardian, so I should look forward to reading that. Because as many of you know, Mark Stein on GB News was given a contract where he was liable for anything that Ofcom didn't like. Mm-hmm. So I should look forward to reading that.
Right, KO Digital have got the results of their digital review. And on the 16th of February at Canterbury Christchurch University, KO Digital are publishing their review into the digital strategies of the fastest growing companies of the Southeast. The event is aimed at business owners and marketeers, excuse me, to learn how to grow a business online. The seminar will cover three key areas: headline findings on what the fastest growing companies in the Southeast are doing and not doing online, what business tools should SMEs look out for in the future, and a business growth panel discussion. It's free to attend. As I say, it's at Canterbury Christchurch University on the 16th of February. If you want to find out more about that event or to book your free ticket, if you go to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/calendar, all the details are there. You still haven't got anything to read, have
no,
you?
No, no, I'm just talking to Wayne, really.
Are you?
Yeah, he's still...
Is he all right?
He's at Tesco now.
Is he?
Still listening. Yeah.
What's he doing in Tesco's? He's doing his shopping.
Yeah.
While he's listening to us.
He's got the old Wi-Fi, hasn't he? He can still listen.
Okay. The High 3 Network Small Business Meetup on the 15th of February at 10:30 a.m. The next Small Business Meetup event at Canterbury Christchurch University again. This networking event features a business coach delivering a session on confident communication, a talk on three barriers to commercial confidence, and a workshop of sales for non-salespeople. We end with a demonstration of our new cutting-edge Rococo motion capture. Refreshments are provided and the opportunity to network with amazing businesses and creatives. To book your free ticket, eventbrite.co.uk/hi, that's HI3 Network Small Business Meetups. And that's the 15th of February.
I'm going to, as you know, to Dubai. Well, next week we've got an animal program, haven't we? We've got a long dog coats lady, yeah, and dog collar, and Adrian Kearney has been contacting me, and I tried to get him to come on as well, but he's busy.
He rang me yesterday.
But he would like another date.
Yeah, he rang me yesterday say he couldn't come on. I didn't know you'd invited him.
Oh, I just invite people when I can't see.
I know.
Well, I thought he would have blended in well with the long dog company.
Yeah.
But they did say that I should bring Lady Darcy, this is my greyhound rescue, in so that they can measure her for a modelling for a coat.
She does it deliberately.
I could pretend it's a blind dog, you know, for blind assistance.
I could put your eyes out and then that would go really well, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Have you ever seen a greyhound guiding anyone?
No, exactly.
A bit fast.
Yeah.
Adrian Kearney, I thought would be, but he would like to come on, so you've got to give him another day.
Yeah, I said, he rang me yesterday.
But it'd be nice if we could gear it around, you know, well, we had vets on before. We could gear it with a vet, couldn't we? We had a vet on before.
Yeah, well, we've got two guests for next week already. Yeah, in fact, we've got three.
Yeah, but not next week. Adrian can't come on next week. It's another week. You're going to
No, listen to what I'm saying. We've already got three guests next week.
Oh, have we?
Without Adrian.
Oh, yeah. We've got Long Dog and a Short Collar. And yeah. Who's the other person?
It's a recorded interview with Motorpoint.
Well, you see, you smuggled that in without even telling me.
Yeah,
well,
it
where's the continuity?
There's no continuity. It's about dates.
Yeah, I love a date. And then the following 2 weeks, Belah in Arabic, date.
Yeah.
Following 2 weeks, I'll be lounging in Dubai, eating.
I know you will.
Eating Belah.
Dates off the
tree.
Ordering people about in Arabic.
Yeah.
I know you will.
Yeah.
And leaving me here to get on with it.
Well, funny enough, how long we got? When I was waiting for my Mercedes in Canterbury, hanging around as I was, they have a little wagon there selling, as a Syrian man, selling food.
What kind of food?
Shawarma and things. Love a shawarma.
What was he selling?
Shawarma.
What was he selling?
Shawarma.
Dog worma.
Shawarma.
Ah, right.
You've had a shawarma before. You need to get out more. Shawarma. It's like sliced lamb. It's a kebab, basically.
Yeah, right? See, I knew what it was, but you were trying to avoid calling it what it is.
It's shawarma.
Yeah, you were trying to be all pretentious. It's a blooming doner kebab, and you know it is.
Pretentious?
Yeah, exactly. I had a shawarma. No, I had a doner kebab when I came out of the pub.
And I had a lovely conversation in my Egyptian accent, and he had a lovely Syrian accent, so it's a little bit different. You know.
Lovely. Right, we've reached the end of the show.
Yeah.
I want to say a huge thank you to our two guests, the wonderful Mr. Matthew Dorrington of Blue Moxie, Mr. Gareth Hall of Econ Polyurethanes, to my stonkingly gorgeous co-host, Jill Serkin. We'll be back with another show next week. Bye for now.
Goodbye.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews. This is...